I hope we're not starting too early, and I hope that doesn't discompose any of you, but we're welcome. We want to welcome you here to New Orleans today. We have a very, our panel has a pretty active and interesting docket, which isn't always the case, so we thank you for that too. We'll call the first, the preliminaries are, we've read your briefs, we have had access to the record excerpts, but not normally to the entire record before oral argument, so when you need to cite the record, please give us exact references, if you will. And we also adhere to our time schedule very closely. We can now see a red timer on your side of on our side of the podium. It also is on your side of the podium in addition to our traffic lights. When the yellow light comes on, you have 2 minutes. When the red light comes on, we ask you to conclude as quickly as possible. And I can't resist saying this. We're not looking at your belly buttons. We're looking at the red timer sometimes. And if we're looking at the red timer instead of you, that means you're a little not exciting. So try to keep us looking at you. We'll call the first case of the morning, number 072866, United States versus LaToya. We'll hear from Ms. Maselli.
May it please the court. This case offers an insight into what happens when the defendant actually speaks up at trial. I offer this because typically this type of claim would be in a 2255 where the defendant might assert, I wanted a different lawyer, and then the record is silent as to it. In a court hearing before trial, he spoke up and he expressed his desire that he did not want the lawyer he was given and he wanted to hire his own lawyer.
What was wrong with the lawyer?
I don't know what was wrong with the lawyer, Your Honor, except one thing that was in the record was he said the first day he came to the detention center, he said, you've got to plead. And Mr. LaToya had a problem with that.
That's like pretty good advice.
Well, it might have been, but unfortunately, without having met him before, it might not have followed the strictures of Wiggins or a proper investigation. I mean, Mr. LaToya has been very prolific in his writings, in his comments to the court, which might give rise to some interest in who he is as a person and where he got to where he was today. During that hearing where he first expressed to the district
now, what's that now? Is that something that we need to read about how he got here and where he's come from and so on?
Well, I think the record is prolific with all that he says in there, and there's writings to the court, there's writings to this court, there's writings to the record includes his comments. But what happened was when he did speak up and he said, I want a lawyer, a different lawyer, the district court said, you can go hire counsel if you want. And that's USCA 5682. That was on March 9th. The next hearing, he comes back before the court and he says, he has hired a lawyer. Abraham Fish is going to represent him. And then he says he has to call him and let him know what's going on, presumably going back to the detention center to call him. And that would be page 716 of the record.
Who is Mr. Fish? He never showed up. Is he a real person?
He is a real person. He did not show up. And again, in reviewing this, I thought, well, it is different than Gonzalez-Lopez because Mr. Fish didn't show up. But what happened was he told the district court, I've hired Mr. Fish, and I'm going to call him and let him know what's going on. The district court says, no, you can't have him. And he proceeds to say, well, I want Mr. Fish. And then the clerk speaks up, it's in the record, around 716 to 720, and says, he's not authorized to practice in the Southern District of Texas.
Who was this Mr. Fish? Where did he reside?
It's not in the record, but it would be, take judicial notice, he's a lawyer in Houston.
But not authorized in the Southern District?
That's what a clerk stated on the record. And I don't know whether that's true or not. It's not in the record.
Was there a motion to appoint for Mr. Fish to enter as counsel or anything? I mean, in other words, the clerk didn't just blurt it out.
Actually, the clerk stated in the middle of this hearing, he's not authorized to practice before the
Well, then he was looking it up.
Right. I assume that.
Okay.
Well, what I'm not understanding is, what did you expect at this point for the judge to do? I mean, isn't it incumbent, if the attorney wants to appear, he's been hired, shouldn't he file papers asking to appear?
I assume that when the court told him at that point, you can't have him, you cannot have him, he's not authorized to practice here, and that's when the court proceeded at that point to continue with the Feretta warnings. The court didn't say, hey, have him come in, have him appear pro hoc vice. The court said, you can't have him. That's what the court said.
And then the lawyer, his attorney, then just sat back and said, well, I guess I can't appear, I won't appear. There was no, you're saying that somehow the district court, it was the district court's fault that then the attorney didn't, knowing he couldn't appear. I mean, every attorney who's not licensed in the district would know they couldn't appear without some sort of motion pro hoc vice or something. So is it incumbent on the judge to call the lawyer and say, oh, by the way, if you want to appear, you have to file a motion?
I think it would have been incumbent upon the district court to advise him, Mr. Fish is not a member of the bar, have him appear next time and we'll find out why or whether he wants to appear on your behalf. But the court said, no, you cannot have him and you represent yourself.
So he the court didn't tell him to represent himself. He wanted to represent himself at that point.
Well, at that point, he wanted Mr. Fish. He continually said, and I mean, what's interesting is for someone, he has a sixth grade education from the Sierra Leone. He said, well, I mean, that's my Sixth Amendment, you know. I mean, I have to choose my own attorney, 720. But what happened was the district court said, no, you can't have him, and continued with the Feretta warnings.
Who said human rights haven't been globalized? Sierra Leone, I know my rights. That's wonderful. But this was Judge Werlein, and Judge Werlein is normally very, very careful and particular in these sort of matters. So that's why I was...
I would agree. And in the second hearing, the court even says, I was off the cuff last time. And I don't have the exact cite for that, but it's in that 700 series. And so he continues to give him the Feretta warnings. And then I will agree it was out of the blue when he says, I've hired Mr. Fish. And the court was like, well, why isn't he here? And he said, well, I have to go back to the detention center and call him. And that's when the court said, you can't have him because the clerk stated that he was not a member of the Southern District. And it continues like this. I mean, he's like, I want Mr. Fish. And the court's like, you can't have him. And he's like, well, I want Abraham Fish. You can't have him. And so the court continues to admonish him of the Feretta warnings, of which he chooses then to represent himself for a portion of the trial.
Hadn't he already gone through a couple of lawyers?
He had gone through a federal public defender and wasn't happy with him, and then got Mr. Alston, the second lawyer, and wasn't happy with him, accused him of colluding with the government. And he says on the record, which there's no objection by Mr. Alston, that, hey, he came to see me the first day in the detention center and told me to plead. I would agree that the court gave him very careful Feretta warnings. But where I don't agree is that he should have been allowed to hire Mr. Fish. It's different than the cases I cited in my brief where someone's pro hoc vice motion was taken away. This, the standard to get pro hoc vice is almost like the standard you have to almost be eligible to be disbarred to not be eligible to appear pro hoc vice. The district court could have protected Mr. LaToya's Sixth Amendment right to counsel of his choice by just telling him, have him come in. But he said, no, you can't have him. It's completely different.
Well, now, so you're not precisely arguing that he had, that the court had an obligation to tell LaToya that this counsel could be admitted pro hoc vice.
I don't believe he had that duty, but I think he would have had the duty to advise him, all right, have him come in, instead of relying on the word of a clerk. I mean, Mr. LaToya can't dispute anything the clerk says. Mr. LaToya is out there on his own representing himself from a detention center, not even from a free space. So I think the court should have allowed him to bring in Mr. Fish, and then after some sort of investigation into why he's not a member of the Southern District or what could have precluded him from practicing in the Southern District, then saying, all right, Mr. LaToya, you can't have him. Here's why. But to just out and out say, right before trial, you can't have him, here's your Feretta warnings, when he was going to hire him, I think violates the Sixth Amendment right. The government states that Mr. LaToya's reliance on Gonzales-Lopez is misplaced for three reasons. First, because in Gonzalez-Lopez, the government agreed the district court had erred in denying the attorney or denying the defendant the counsel of his choice. Well, here, the government has conceded that even Mr. LaToya was not prepared to represent himself. It's government's brief, page 33, where they say he's unschooled. I mean, he was unprepared. He had the inability to represent himself. So he wasn't able to represent himself, which is apparent from the portions of the record where he did represent himself.
And he did, but he did have standby counsel, right?
It's standby counsel.
And then didn't they take over?
In the middle of the agent's testimony. The record is clear. He was told by the court to hire counsel. When he came back the next time to court, he said, I've hired counsel. The court said, you can't have that counsel you've hired. Represent yourself. There was no other option offered by the district court. Second, the government states correctly that Mr. LaToya did not have the right to appointed counsel of his choice. That's true, but he tried to hire Mr. Fish. And the fact that Mr. Fish did not appear in court is of no moment, because he was told he couldn't come. I mean, he was told, you can't have him. And so what would Mr. LaToya have done when he got back to the detention center and called up Mr. Fish? Well, I know we've hired you, but the court said you can't come. I mean, the record's unclear as to even if he made that call.
I'm unclear as to whether, because his statement is, I've hired Mr. Fish. Mm-hmm. And yet you keep talking about him saying he can't come. If he'd been hired, wouldn't it be incumbent on the court to advise the defendant that this person wasn't licensed in that district and therefore wouldn't be able to appear? I mean, I would assume hiring somebody means you paid money. And so should the judge just say, oh, well, that's fine. He can be here when he knows that, or at least the clerk knows, that he's not licensed to appear there.
I think it would have been incumbent on the district court to advise Mr. LaToya to have Mr. Fish come to court. He did not advise him of that.
But he's been hired. Why would the attorney not come to court at that point? Well, at least that's what Fish is saying. I've hired him.
Well, Mr. LaToya said he hired Mr. Fish, and then he said he was told to hire a lawyer on March 9th. On March 13th, he comes back to court and says, all right, I've hired a lawyer, and I need to go back to the detention center and call him. The court says, well, you can't have him.
And so wouldn't it be incumbent upon LaToya to tell his attorney, they tell me you're not licensed in the district?
Well, it might be incumbent upon him if he even understood what that meant with a sixth grade education. You know, not licensed in the Southern District. He knows the man's a lawyer. I mean, there's all sorts of nuances in what Mr. LaToya understood. He's not a lawyer, and he's not, I mean, someone who regularly appears in federal court.
But didn't you, it seemed you were criticizing the judge for saying you can't have him. And yet you go back to he has a sixth grade education. Perhaps that was the only way the judge could get across to him that you can't have him because he's not licensed here.
I think it was incumbent on the district court to at least allow Mr. Fish to come to court instead of telling Mr. LaToya, you can't have him. Bring your counsel of choice. The Sixth Amendment says you have a right to counsel of choice. He was told to hire a lawyer. All right, he hired the wrong lawyer. Apparently, the district court thought this isn't the lawyer you can have. The district court never advised him, let's reset this so you can hire another lawyer, so you can choose another lawyer. The district court merely stated, you can't have him, and then proceeded with the Feretta warnings. The Sixth Amendment, as Justice Scalia explained in Gonzalez-Lopez, what's at stake is the right to counsel of choice. That's what's at stake, and that's what Mr. LaToya lost in this case through the district court's denial of letting him either have Mr. Fish or letting Mr. Fish come to court.
Of course, we denied his rights on appeal, too. He tried to fire you, didn't he?
Many times. Many times.
I mean, isn't a court entitled to take all that into consideration, too?
Yes, although the court did not take into consideration my request to be taken off either. Oh. If there are no further questions, I'll give back my time.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Wilson?
May it please the court. In this case, Judge Warline exerted a great deal of effort to protect Mr. LaToya's Sixth Amendment rights. The point of the Sixth Amendment is to ensure fairness in the process, and that's exactly what Mr. LaToya received. A defendant has no right to choose his appointed counsel. Here, however, Judge Warline gave Mr. LaToya two appointed counsels. The first one was Mr. Brett Newton, a very accomplished lawyer with the Public Defender's Office. That was in August of 06. When Mr. LaToya complained about him, in October of 06, Mr. Alston was appointed, another accomplished lawyer, a board-certified criminal lawyer who's also a former assistant United States attorney. The court repeatedly told Mr. LaToya that he had had excellent attorneys and that they were not in cahoots with the government, which is what he maintained throughout. This court recently held in Fields that the refusal to proceed with able-appointed counsel without good cause is a voluntary waiver of that right. Now, the right to appointed counsel, of course, is distinguished from a paying situation. But even where you have the right to retain counsel of your choosing, it's a qualified right. It's not an absolute right. What's a little bit interesting about this record here is Mr. LaToya had appointed counsel, meaning he was indigent or almost indigent. He still has appointed counsel. However, the way this entire situation arose was on the eve of trial, March 9th of 07. It was just a routine pretrial conference. He all of a sudden piped up and said he wanted new counsel. And Judge Warline said he could hire somebody. But then LaToya started talking about self-representation. The court spent quite a bit of time discouraging self-representation for obvious reasons. But when LaToya insisted, Mr. Alston was ordered to act as standby counsel. Judge Warline said he had thought about it over the weekend, was troubled by it, and called another hearing on March 13th, 4 days later. The judge spent an entire hour, at least that's what the record shows, an entire hour devoted to LaToya's representation. And as this court knows, hardly anyone gets an hour in court with anyone. At that time, the court explained the magnitude of the counts, the sentencing, the guidelines, and how serious all these charges were against Mr. LaToya. And all of a sudden, Mr. LaToya piped up and he said he wanted Abraham Fish. Now, during all of this, as Ms. Maselli said, the judge had the clerk check, and Mr. Fish was not licensed. But what's important here is it's not that he wasn't just licensed. His application to be licensed had been denied. And that's an important distinction. This is not somebody who only practices in state court and never tried to appear in federal court. He had tried to become a member of the Southern District of Texas, and it had been denied. Now, we don't know why it was denied, but all we do know is it was denied. Now, what Judge Warline then does, because, of course, he knows Mr. LaToya has appointed counsel, okay? And Mr. LaToya first says that he had talked to Mr. Fish, and then he says that his wife had talked to him. Now, I would agree that that's not really a big distinction. But then he says something later about how he hired him. But the point is here, again, that Mr. Fish's application had been denied. Now, Judge Warline knows all of that, and he more or less says before he knows about the denial, well, then Mr. Fish better get here. And I think, I don't know, but I think because Judge Warline is sensitive to the fact that this is an appointed situation and whatnot, he says, okay, but let's still go ahead and go over all of these counts with you. So he's taking the entire situation very, very seriously. But throughout this entire process, Mr. Fish never tried to appear or file anything. It's very possible he had declined to represent LaToya, or even more importantly, that he had never heard of this situation. And as I said in my brief, there's absolutely no obligation for the court or the government or anybody else to contact Mr. Fish or advise him to file a pro hac vice motion, particularly when the admission had already been previously denied. Now, the district court, of course, has wide latitude in this area, but I believe that the record is clear that Judge Warline did everything and anything that was possible in addition to ensuring that Mr. LaToya voluntarily and knowingly waived his rights to counsel. He stressed the difficulties with the self-representation, and he continually revisited this issue. There was the hearing on the 9th, the hearing on the 13th, and then when the trial date, which I believe was on the 19th, it was again revisited. Have you changed your mind? And what Mr. LaToya was doing was more or less manipulating the court. He refused to speak at times and whatnot. What else is a district court to do? He had done everything he could. He'd given him the two appointed court counsels, which of course he wasn't required to do, and never did this phantom counsel, Abraham Fish, ever make contact or anyone else. And Judge Werlein continued to say, look, you can retain your counsel. But the point is, Mr. Fish not only was not licensed, but his application had been denied. And even on page 761 of the record, just before trial, LaToya was continuing to insist that Mr. Fish was going to come. So I don't think it's a fair conclusion to say that that Mr. LaToya walked away thinking he could never have Mr. LaToya. Right there, right before the 1 o'clock beginning of trial, we have Mr. LaToya saying, well, Abraham Fish is going to come. But the record is clear, Mr. Fish never came. So the bottom line, I believe, is that the court simply did not abuse its discretion. It embraced LaToya's Sixth Amendment rights to the fullest extent possible. And of course, LaToya had the right to represent himself. While Judge Werlein continually discouraged it for obvious reasons and got over him with the federal rules.
But they're not really arguing about that. He's just contending that he was denied counsel of choice. He's not contending that he was, that Judge Werlein mistakenly let him represent himself for a while.
But he had claimed that he wasn't going to do A, B, or C unless he had proper counsel. And at times he said that Mr. Alston was not effective counsel, as you said about Ms. Maselli. But the point is that he's had effective counsel all along. He's had very solid counsel. So, and again, what I want to point out is that before Judge Werlein knew that the application to practice in the Southern District had been denied, he had said, Mr. Fish better get here. But Mr. Fish never came. And I, too, looked up Mr. Fish, and he is a member in good standing of the Texas Bar. But I don't know if he pulled the name out of a hat or whatnot. The only thing we have is that supposedly his wife had called Mr. Fish. So unless the court has any questions, I will give back my time because I think there's a wealth of evidence to support the jury's verdict against Mr. LaToya on the evidence, and the instruction for aiding and abetting tracked this court's precedent. And the Fifth Circuit pattern jury charges.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Maselli?
The record's unclear why his application was denied. It could have been procedural. Maybe he forgot to include a check. So I think it's unfair to say he's not somehow qualified to practice in the Southern District because the record is silent. And in this court in Nolan, although it's a different, it was a withdrawal of a motion for pro hac vice, the court said there needs to be a balancing of the right to counsel and the court standards before an attorney is disqualified. Now, Mr. Fish wasn't disqualified. He wasn't even there. He wasn't given the opportunity to be there. And whether or not he was called or not called, I think the record is clear that he was told to hire counsel. He told the court he hired counsel. The court said, you can't have that counsel, and continued with the Feretta warnings. I would say the right to counsel and the right to hire your own attorney are protected by the Sixth Amendment, and he was denied that most basic right. We believe this case should be rendered or reversed for a new trial.
All right. Thank you. And Ms. Maselli, I realize that you were continuing your representation under court order, but you've done a very good job, and we certainly do. Mr. LaToya has gotten very fine representation. Thank you.